Welcome to another episode of Metanoia with Junius Ricardo Stanton. Our guest on this edition of Metanoia is Reverend Twyna Malone. She's a senior minister at the Center of Peace, located in Elkins Park, Pennsylvania, just outside of Philadelphia. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Junius, and thank you for having me on your program this morning. I'm honored and delighted to be here.
Well, it's my pleasure. Tell us a little bit about yourself, share some of your personal and professional background and how you got involved with in this thing called New Thought.
Yeah. Well, you know, I am originally from Tennessee, Murfreesboro, Tennessee, a small town, 20-25 minutes east of Nashville. It's one of those towns where everybody knows everybody. And my grandparents had, my grandparents had purchased several plots of land, and they built houses on the land, and they also built a church on the land. And so my a majority of my early childhood in Tennessee was at the church. And it, if not with on my father's side, it was his parents who had the church built on their land. My mother and her family were also very heavily involved in church. So was anything strange for me or we participated in church all the time. We were the family that was there, you know, to 4 or 5 o'clock. We were there for Bible study, this sort of thing. And so.
Now, was the church the center of the community, the hub of the community?
Not the hub. I wouldn't call it the hub of the community. There were several churches. This one was more family oriented. And over the years, the church is still in existence. Over the years, the church has, you know, ebbed and flowed. There would be members and members would leave and go other places, and family members would be there participating, and then they would go to other places and then come back. And it's still kind of operating in that way. For many years, the pastor of the church was also a family member. So that kind of stuff has also been a part of it, was a part of it. And my grandfather who built the church, he was a deacon and worked on the church, make sure it was the upkeep and all this kind of stuff was happening. Yeah. And my grandmother was the mother of the church. And so, you know, it was that kind of thing. And so I think I was always interested in knowing more about life and knowing more about God. And when I was 10 years old, I think I was 10 or 11, my mother remarried and we moved to, and the man she remarried was in the military. He was in the army. And so it was my mother, my brother, and myself, we moved away. And we never really moved back to Tennessee after that for any long periods of time. We would go back every now and then for maybe a year or something like that. And so in between, we didn't really go to church too much when we moved away to different states. But every time we went back to Tennessee, we just got back in the rhythm and the flow of going to church. And so it's a Baptist denomination. And I would have to say that I didn't quite understand the messages and the sermons. I didn't really get Sunday school too much, but because, you know, there was a big contradiction. They would tell us what, but not quite how. And I never saw the what played out in my immediate, you know, experience.
In your experiences, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, but I always had a curiosity about life and God. I was thinking this morning, I remember when I was, I don't know how old I was, maybe 6 or 7. We lived in a little tiny house with my grandfather and his sons. And there was a little teeny tiny bookcase in the, like in the corner of the house. And there weren't that many books on there, maybe about 10 or 15 books, as I recall. But one of them was a book of poetry. I don't know who wrote the book. I don't know. I don't can't remember anything about the book except for the one poem that stood out. And the poem goes like this: "Is mind over matter? If you really don't mind, it really doesn't
really
matter.
Doesn't matter.
It really doesn't matter." And I never forgot that. And so, fast forward, we're in the military, traveling all over the place, and sometimes we would go to church, but not like we were back in Tennessee. And then I myself got in the military. And was still very curious about God, and at that time more open and curious about other faith traditions. And so I did some research on Buddhism, and just started to attend different types of churches. And then fast forward, I was in the military for about seven years. And then when I got out, still very curious, relatively young at that time, still in my 20s when I got out of the military. And I met this woman and we were dating, and she was in a 12-step program. And so I went to the meetings with her, and the meetings opened something up in me. I was very taken back by how safe the space was and how sacred they had made.
How non-judgmental it was.
How non-judgmental, yeah. And then the point of turning my life over to something higher than I am was very intriguing to me. And I remember always saying, I wish there was something like this for people who didn't have a drug, you know, or alcohol or whatever addiction was going on. And so then what happened was, so I started dibble dabbling again in churches, trying to find a church home. I was living in Philadelphia at that time. And so I had a group of friends, and one of the friends moved to California. And she said that there was gonna be a guy coming to Philadelphia to preside over this pastor's ordination. And she said, you really should go. You're going to like what he has to hear. So, and the tickets were free. So we got tickets and we went. And it was, the name of the church was Psalm Place, S-O-M, Science of Mind, Psalm Place. And the gentleman who was the senior minister there, his name was Reverend Bruce. And the man who came down to preside over his ordination was Reverend Michael Beckwith from Agape in California, who, I don't know if you know him or not, but he's pretty world renowned. Yeah. But back then, you know, 20, 25 years ago, not as known. And so we went, and it was the first time that the message resonated and made sense. The how started to make sense to me. It matched with the what that I had always been hearing. Mm. And so that weekend they had a number of things going on, and they also had they were doing a ritual, what they called a burning bowl. And it was outside, and they had a big pit that they had made, and the flames were, you know, it was a real flame, a real fire. And people could bring things that they had written down that they wanted to release, or you could bring an actual object. It was pretty intense. And so we went and we participated, and it was the first time I had experienced something like that. And so that was my introduction to new thought.
Okay. Now, obviously, you said it resonated. So what prompted you to follow through to the point where you were not just an attendee, you went on to become part of it and become a minister? Mm-hmm. So what prompted you to do that?
What prompted me to do it was they had practices in place. They offered meditation. They offered classes to better understand the material that was being presented. They sold books. There was probably the greatest thing that influenced me was that there was a great sense of community and fellowship. People were friendly. I didn't see people gossiping. it seemed that people really wanted the best for you and wanted you to understand as they were coming to understand. So getting involved in the classes, participating in the workshops, meditation workshops, whatever, all kind of workshops, healing the inner child kind of workshops. Once I started to participate, once I started to take the classes, once I started to get more involved with the folks that were there, because I'm more of an introvert than an extrovert. So it was not the easiest thing for me to do, but it seemed to come easy there. So all of those things were happening for me that made me continue on with the study. I could get, if I had questions, I knew who to go to get answers. They weren't far off, they were available, accessible, this sort of thing.
No, so how did you find out about the Center of Peace? Because, you know, it's when we didn't join, we went when it was on Wissahickon Avenue.
Okay.
And it was a relatively small community. Then when you moved out on, you were on, I think, out in on Temple's campus for a little while, something out that way. Mm-hmm. We went out, we'd go there every now and then. So how did you gravitate toward Center of Peace?
Well, so a lot of the people who attend the Center of Peace also were members and congregants at some place. And so at the time, Reverend Sheila Pierce, who's the founder of the Center of Peace, who, as you might know, Junius, has made her transition. Right. She was a practitioner at some place, and she had decided to go to ministerial school. And so while she was away at ministerial school, some place closed down. There was something between the minister and the congregants. And I don't remember all the details because I was involved, but not that involved. And so that was closed down for maybe about a year and a half. And Reverend Sheila graduated ministerial school and came back here and started the Center of Peace. So I knew I stayed in contact with a few people. So when the Center of Peace started, I think I ran into somebody and he said, hey, we are starting a new center, a new church. Here's where it is. And so pretty much from the beginning of the founding of the Center of Peace, I was around, not the very beginning. I wasn't a part of the charter members, but shortly after that, the very first place that the Center of Peace was meeting at was at Chestnut Hill Grill out in Chestnut Hill. And so that's where I joined back in. And quickly, I already knew Reverend Sheila and a lot of the people who were participating. So it was easy for me to get back into the groove and to stay connected and participate. I right away, I started taking classes again, and one class just led to another. So I already had some, I was already intertwined with them, already mm-hmm. knew the people there. And so that's how I got to the Center of Peace. And In this particular denomination, I'm just calling it a denomination, they have a track where after you take a number of classes, you can become what we call a licensed professional practitioner. And that's people who have studied, people who have applied the principles, people who are really engaged in the practices, and who now come to a point where they want to be of service to others. And practitioners serve primarily through prayer and through counseling or coaching, that sort of thing. So I became a practitioner. This was in 2000, and I think I became a practitioner in 2006, something like that. And then at the same time, Junius, I was very interested. My grandfather passed away in 2003. I had become very interested in death and dying. And so I became a volunteer at a hospice program. And I soon found out that they had chaplains as part of the team, and it was a paid position. So, the key component for hospice chaplains is you have to be open to all faith traditions and denominations. Well, that was easy because that's what we do. We study Eastern and Western philosophies. So it was easy for me to see how that fit into who I was becoming. And so, and I had a bachelor's degree. I had gotten my degree while I was in the military. And I thought I needed to get a ministerial, a master's in divinity or something like that to be able to transition over into doing, being a chaplain. Because what I had been doing for work was training and development, human resources, that sort of thing.
Right.
And so, I find myself in ministerial school to get ready to change my career. And probably halfway through ministerial school, I remember one Sunday being in a service and Reverend Sheila was doing the service. And one of the congregants stood up and she kind of had her hands on my shoulder. She was standing behind me and she kind of had her hands on my shoulder and I was sitting. And she said something like, "Oh, you're doing this for us." And I thought, going to school, coming to minister? I didn't quite click. I didn't, because that wasn't my entry point into ministerial school. It wasn't in my purview. I wasn't thinking that way. And then a few more people said, "Oh, you're going to be the next senior minister." So it was kind of in my face, and I thought, wait a minute, is this what this is all about? I'm supposed to be ministering to in a different kind of way than the way that I thought. And so fast forward, I was serving on the board, and Reverend Sheila and I had a really, really good relationship as minister and practitioner. So when she was diagnosed, you know, I was working at that time as the associate minister. And so, you know, so as things went on, it became very clear that this was going to be an opportunity for me if I wanted it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of how I got to this point.
Right. Now, your material says you're a trans denomination or trans denominal. So what does that mean versus inter or intra or ecumenical? So explain what that means, because the times we were attending, you had a varied and diverse membership. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming that people came from other traditions and, you know, they like what they were experiencing. So what is trans denominal? What does that mean?
Yeah, I guess if I was going to have to explain it, I would say that it, because so much of the teaching is around science and philosophy, that it's more than an intra type of inter type of religion that's going on. It transcends, you know, just religion. It takes us into other areas, other aspects of living, and ties it all together. So for me, when we say trans-denominational, you know, you can, if your belief is in football, the God football, you could still find, by coming to our services and participating, you could still find ways that benefited you in having more joy in your experience in life. For me, that's kind of what trans-denominational means. It's more than denominations.
Right. Now, we hear so much in recent years about spirituality. So what is spirituality? And we're gonna talk about, like you mentioned, science, and it's also, from my perspective, it's also mysticism, it's metaphysics. Yeah. So what is spirituality? Give us a concise definition of spirituality.
Junius, I don't know if I can give us a concise definition of spirituality. I guess if I was going to sum it up, kind of make it make sense, is that it is something that you do. It's not something that you come to understand, but something more than understanding, it's something that you do. Coming to a place of great realization that you play a part in manifesting and demonstrating what it is that you want in your life. There is no in between. That we all have a direct line to the infinite source, to the infinite intelligence, to the pure love. So for me, spirituality is more of an action than a, what's the word I want to give?
It's merely a cognitive kind
more
of
than, yeah, more exercise. Than cognitive. Right. It's more than a cognitive exercise, yes.
Mm-hmm. My experience, and I knew some people and say in another life, either we went to school together or we were in school at the same time. Then I met Jerry and Reggie Walker. And so I knew what they were about when they were dealing with the children and that fabulous program that they had. And the thing that tied them together with the other folks I knew was that they were involved in the community, you know, and they were kind, they were intelligent, they were very accomplished in whatever field they were in, and they were also giving back to the community. So is that something that is an outgrowth? Because one of the things that I'm seeing and quote unquote new thought is that it takes a comprehensive and holistic view of life. And like you just said, it's about being. So you look at the Quakers, I would consider the Society of Friends, you know, we're searchers. So we went to Unity for a while. I'm familiar with Science of Mind, not as familiar with Science of Mind as say with Unity or some of the others. So is that part of it? You know, it's not just where you're sitting around meditating and that's it. And it's about taking what you gain and glean from meditation and then applying it to your life. That's what I see it as a practitioner and a minister. Is that close to what this is about?
Yeah, definitely. It's what it is about. Now, I wouldn't say that we are at the level of our Quaker brothers and sisters. I mean, they are out there, you know, in the streets, at least as I understand it and from what I've come to understand. But yes, it is the applying what you learn to your life. And then when because when you start to apply it in your life, it is expansive by nature, the principles and the practices, meaning that others will see how your life is changing. You'll be a real demonstration in somebody's life. They'll start to see you, you know, have more joy in your life, have less anxiety in your life, start to move in life in ways that you have been intentional. You'll say something, I want to become a chaplain, and people will see you become a chaplain and can directly apply it, take it back to the application of the practices and understanding the principles. So I said all that to say that once you got it, it automatically touches everybody that's around you. And so now, how does it get out in the community? You know, one person touches one person, and maybe they touch another two or three people, you know, and before you know it, just your presence, like you said about Reggie and Jerry, your kindness, your ability to see past what is happening and to see something else as a possibility, all those things, it's like a magnet. People want to know, well, how did you get that way? What did you do? So in terms of taking it, you know, being out in the community, yes. And I would say for the larger organization, which is called Centers for Spiritual Living, who's headquartered in Denver, Colorado. You know, we are just one center. There are over 350 centers worldwide in different countries. There's, you know, thousands upon thousands of practitioners, thousands of ministers. So in terms of it being the focus, there has become in the recent years more about the community, more aligned with, you know, how can New Thought and how can Science of Mind be a benefit to the whole world, to around, you know, the injustice that's happening and all of the things that's happening in our world today.
Now, I was going to ask you, because that seems to be a thrust now with Michael Beckwith. He's really renowned now, and he is on a almost like a campaign to bring New Thought to the masses, to share the principles, share what the essence of New Thought is in terms of empowerment, transformation, and personal dynamism. So is that the future? Is that the future of New Thought now as you move forward? And you're just one of many.
Yeah.
I think I have a candle, and somebody over here, the Quakers have a candle, the Science of Mind people have a candle.
Yeah.
And so they're bringing all this light onto the planet at this particular time.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a big part of it, you know, in our own unique ways. Most of the congregations in Science of Mind at Centers for Spiritual Living are primarily Caucasian, and our community happens to be predominantly Black. So there's already, you know, different differences. And so as a whole, we can help each other through principle and practice to come to understand what people might not have gleaned as a possibility, or that there was something off in a certain area. Mm-hmm. And how do we address that? You know, so I remember being at a conference, one of the conferences for Centers for Spiritual Living, and a question came up was, are the teachings relevant?
Mm-hmm.
And if you think the teaching is relevant, who is it relevant to? And so I was sitting there and I started thinking, I said, well, you know, a good way to assess is the teaching relevant is, and who is it relevant to? Let's look and see who's not here. Who's not at the conference of, you know, maybe 1,000 people. It's a good way to capture who's not there and who is here. Who's the message getting to? Who are we preparing our messages for? Who are our classes designed to touch? This sort of thing. And so I said, well, where are the Black men? If we want to, you know, to create a world that works for everyone, then we have to consider everyone. And we have to be honest. The teaching requires, you know, for a great deal of honesty and introspection and this sort of thing. So I guess, you know, when things like that come up, the body itself can't turn away from it. And then things in the world happen. So I would say, yes, that's where it's going. That's where it's headed to being, like you said, a light here and a light there. And the light then comes together. And there is transformation. You know, it's interesting, Junius, because, you know, people are in a place where they are ready to receive something different. And this is what is different. You know, it's no longer the best kept secret or, you know, a meeting in the back room somewhere, that sort of thing. And I say that because while I was doing hospice, you know, I would be in the room with the doctors, the nurses, the social workers, and everybody else, the salespeople, everybody else that completed the team. And there would be an opportunity, we met weekly to have team discussions. And so I had a role, maybe about a minute or a minute and a half, where I was to provide some sort of inspiration. And so I brought to the table who I am. And I have to tell you, Junius, I got more emails than I can count of people who were, I don't know what their faith tradition was, but certainly I would say Catholic, traditional, Christian, Baptist, you know, it was all over the gamut.
Right, right.
Protestant, yeah. But they all resonated with the truth and wanted to know, could I give them some resources? Could I meet with them? Would I be willing to talk to them about different things? I'm just sharing that story to say that I think that people are ready for something new. And it is your light and our Quaker brothers and sisters and what Michael is doing in the world and what people are doing all over the world in different countries. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm some of the things that you've said have triggered other questions. So I've heard you talk about possibility. And I remember Robert Schuller, that was one of his nuggets, you know, the possibility thinking. And he was a disciple of Norman Vincent Peale with the power of positive thinking. Yeah. And both of them caught it in terms of a lot of Protestant ministers because they were accused of going against their orthodoxy. But yet that message is growing. And then you had the situation where the secret came out. So they were talking about the law of attraction. So that was like a peek behind the veil that there are laws and there are principles that work in the universe and we need to understand them and, you know, augment or at least complement the type of so-called education that we're getting to include those. So do you think all of that is part and parcel to the growth of so-called new thought? Because really, this is not new. This we, human beings have been aware of this for millennia.
Yeah, sure. The mystics of old, as you say, are the Egyptians. And yeah, it's, mm-hmm. it's nothing yeah. new. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think there is all of that that you said. And I mean, if you mentioned a secret, pretty much everybody has heard of the secret, the book or saw it on Oprah or has, you know, this sort of thing. Matter of fact, if when I do meet somebody new and they want to know about, you know, my tradition, I will say, are you familiar with the secret? And most people are. But I think that, and I think, you know, Norman Vincent Peale, he and Ernest Holmes, who is the founder of Science of Mind, were good friends.
Oh, okay.
Studied together.
I didn't know that. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so now, you know, you have the Joel Goldsteins of the world. I mean, if you have ever listened to his messages, it's pure thought, concise, ways to apply the principles. I mean, and, you know, with a Christian twist on it. But so, yeah, I think with all of that, yeah. And of course, the worldwide internet. It's easy to get to. It's easy to share, you know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, and when people, and it's much easier to, just to share, you know, I think it was back in 2018 or 19, I can't remember. We were at another conference and it was in California. And I went to the conference along with some of our congregants, and we were going to, the conference started on Monday. And so Sunday we were going to go to Agape, where Michael Bernard Beckwith Center. And so we went, and we knew a couple people who attended his church, and actually it was Reverend Sheila's daughter, Alish Pierce. And excuse me, one second. Mm. And so we had a front row seat, and Reverend Sheila knew Reverend Michael Beckwith, and they had a connection, and he knew she had made her transition. And so, anyway, we were sitting up front, and as he normally would do when we were meeting in person, he would acknowledge ministers who were there visiting and this sort of thing. And so we happened to be there that day, and he knew I had stepped into the senior minister role and was acknowledging the centerpiece in Philadelphia. And so he said, come up here and say something. you know, I'd come up to the podium and say something. And I was like, say something. But anyway, so I went up there and I don't know what I said because I wasn't prepared really to say anything. So I just, you know, immediately moved to gratitude. Thank you for loving our community and holding us, you know, in light and love as we transition. Because that it was still real, real new at that time. But anyway, you know, so I get off and then come back to Philadelphia. And from that, people who were familiar with Agape, who lived in Philadelphia, who didn't know that there was a New Thought Center, found their way to the center piece. Mm-hmm. So when you say, is all of that a part of it? Yes, all of it is a part of it, in my opinion.
Right. Now, share some of the principles, because we mentioned, you know, positive thinking, pure thought, possibility. And so to many people, they're just words. So, and it gets back to what you were talking about, the what, but not the how.
Yeah.
So explain how each of us has the ability and the power to manifest greatness in our own lives, and what tools are at our disposal to make that happen.
Yeah. Well, the principles. So a great principle is that God and I are one. And it's probably, you know, right at the top of the list of principles. And I bring that one up because it addresses a God outside of us. The, you know, the big hurdle to cross is to begin to understand that there's something within us, as you said, Junius, a power within us, an intelligence within us, a creative medium that we are surrounded by, a law that we are surrounded by, that each of us, because we are of the one, we are the one, God and I are one, then all that God can do, or if that word turns you off, all that is it, that you find out in nature and how nature works, it is a representation of the one. We all have the ability, because we all are thinkers, we all have the ability then to slow down, which is where meditation and awareness comes in, to slow down and to become aware of what we are thinking. And once we can slow down enough to become aware of what we are thinking, we can do a number of things. We can get clear about, is this something that I believe? Where did this belief come from? Is this belief benefiting me, or is it causing me to struggle? And then we can decide what we want to do with the belief. Do we want to keep it? And when we say keep it, the word would be embody it. So do we want to keep this belief and embody it, where the word, where we don't embody it, but it embodies us.
Right, right.
We come to understand it more. Or no, this belief is no longer serving me. And if it's no longer serving you, then you can practice of slowing down, becoming aware. Am I thinking the thing that I don't want? And how often is it a habitual thought pattern going on now? And so awareness then is key, because the way to get out of it is to become aware of it.
Right, right.
I mean, that's what they say in the 12-step programs, you know, aware as well. Awareness is key. I became aware. This sort of thing. So becoming aware, and then understanding. Once we understand the principle that God and I are one, then the next principle is that, you know, that there are infinite possibilities. That the way it works is that through our thinking, through our thoughts, that if we don't want to think one thing and want to think something else, that then every time we become aware that we're thinking this, we move to thinking about what it is that we do want. And it takes time.
Right.
You know?
I was just going to ask you, because you're touching on the very essence. So meditation, you talked about slowing down. So that's important. So talk about meditation, for briefly. And then what you just talked about is your self-monitoring of your thoughts, which trigger your emotions, and then touch on visualization and how important that is, because we all do it all the time. It's just that most of us do it in a way that negatively impacts us or negates any of the greatness that we were trying to do. We self-sabotage. But tell us about meditation, the importance of it, the benefits of it, physically, and as well as cognitively and spiritually, and then the whole thought monitoring and being aware and what nowadays people call mindfulness.
Yeah. So meditation is a practice to not stop yourself from thinking, because we can't stop ourselves from thinking. We are thinking, conscious thinking, right, willing being. So we can't. So in meditation, it is a practice to start to see the thoughts come by and to become non-attached to the thought. So if a thought comes through—
Now, what does that mean? Because the Buddhists talk about non-attachment. What does that mean?
So let's say that I've taken some time to meditate, to quieten myself, to quieten, to lay down what is happening outside of me and to become focused, focus and aware of my thoughts. And if I have a thought about something that happened in the past, if I had a thought about my father left me and I'm not lovable. So that thought can come through, but in meditation, I don't attach myself to it. Where normally if I'm outside of meditation, I can get caught up in the story. My father left me. I don't matter. Nobody loves me. Nobody ever will love me. And on and on and on and on and on, whatever your personal story happens to be. And so what meditation does is it helps us to be non-attached to the thought. There's a non-attachment, slowly letting go of the thought and then the story that that accompanies the thought, because it's just one thought. It's just one thought that leads to a whole story. And then the way to change it is just, again, with one thought. Only one idea that is greater than your current situation and circumstance. So if the thing that I'm thinking about is what's current for me, and it is what's current for us, whatever we're thinking about, then the way to get beyond it is to have another thought. And what meditation does is helps us become aware of that thought.
Mm-hmm.
And non-attachment. It's the benefits. It is, it relieves stress. It, it
lowers your blood pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah, all that. But on a deeper level, are you, in other words, you talked about the universe and I are one. Does meditation help you grasp that? In other words, In the course of getting still and quiet and watching and being non-attached, is there something that comes through, that shines through all of that, that you know that, okay, there's something in me that is greater than all my problems, greater than all this drama that I'm dealing with, and can help you find peace, can help you find direction, guidance, things like that?
Yeah, I think meditation is one way for that to happen and occur. There is also, as you said, visualization. There's also contemplation. There is also visioning, which is different from visualization. But all of those things.
What's the difference between that and visualization?
So visualization is you becoming clear about what you want to have to experience in your life. I want, and a lot of times visualization, most people's focus is on material things. And that's not always, I don't want to say always, but getting, you know, moving from one job to another job, or maybe leaving one situation to another, leaving the marriage, finding a partner, you know, having more money, graduating, to visualize, see it already being done. That's visualization. Visioning differs from visualization in that now you open up a way for God's highest idea. Here's what you think you want and you need. And once you move into visioning, you catch a glimpse of what God's highest idea is about what it is that you think you need. Sometimes it's like this, as I was saying last week in a message, that what we think we need, we don't need. It's the thing behind the thing is really what we need. Mm-hmm. I want to be married because I want to experience more peace. I want to experience whatever it is that you think this thing is going to bring you. So visioning opens us up to a higher idea, something we haven't thought about, something we haven't maybe imagined. And through visioning, it's a process where you are quiet and still, and you ask a series of questions. What's God's highest idea? What's the universe's highest idea? What do I need to release? What do I need to embrace? These kind of questions. And so what happens is some people hear words, some people smell sensations. It's a feeling sensation. Mm-hmm. Some people see pictures, but it's an opportunity for us to glean the highest idea, the highest possibility about whatever it is that we are visioning about. So for example, at the Center of Peace, we are now in the process of visioning for a new home. So we've visualized it, and now we are spending time visioning about it. What is God's highest idea about it, right? And so one of the things that came out is that, you know, home is not a place, but home is wherever we are. We didn't come to that realization on our own, but through visioning, we came to that realization. Mm-hmm. Wherever we are home.
Now, talk about purpose and intent and intention, because one of the ancient wisdoms is that the universe is purposeful. The creator is purposeful. One of the great principles is the universe is mental. So there's, like you said, a power, intelligence, and all of that at work. So where does intention and purpose come in? Where do they come in?
Yeah, so the way that, where this comes in is that we've talked about there being a law, that there's a mental law that we all are subject to, that our thoughts are subject to something. As you said, it's mental, you know, and the Bible says that God created. So we are creators, and so you want to be intentional and purposeful about what you are creating, what you are thinking, because the law is neutral. The law works the same for everybody. And so if you are not intentional, then you get what you get. So if you want joy, then start to plant seeds of joy or have thoughts about joy. The law doesn't ask questions, are you sure that's what you want? It just says, yes. Mm-hmm. So if you want joy, it won't ask you, are you sure? It doesn't ask the law, the intelligence, it doesn't keep score. It's not keeping a list and checking it twice. It doesn't matter what you've done in the past. It doesn't matter who comes with the seed. It just says, yes. It doesn't care about what you didn't do that you are in a habitual thought about. It doesn't care what you did do that you are in a habitual thought. It doesn't care where you missed the mark. It doesn't ask questions at all. So you want to be intentional and purposeful about what you are thinking about, because it's operating whether we are aware of it or ignorant about it. So right. That's why people continue to have the same kind of experiences over and over and over and over and over again in your life.
Now we talk about, because we have a stream of consciousness, so we think X number of thoughts every day.
Yeah.
So explain the importance, and when we talk about non-attachment, so when you attach something, particularly your emotions, you're firing up the universal engine. So, and, you know, and being intentional, you said, if you want peace, you have to sow seeds of peace. So you can't sow seeds of peace, but then be emotionally agitated. That's an oxymoron. So explain how that works.
Right. So, yeah. So you can't, it's called a house divided. You can't be, say you're believing in one thing and thinking another thing, is what I hear you saying, that because
or emotionally attached to, like you said, the law works both ways. So in the Bible, the example of the law working in a negative way is Job saying, that which I greatly feared has come upon me. Even though he was prosperous, even though all that stuff was going on, in his conscious and subconscious, he was fearing disaster.
Disaster, yeah.
And on the positive thing is, if you can speak to this mountain, it'll be removed. So
yeah,
it works either way.
Works either way. And as you said, we have we think thousands of thoughts a day. And the thoughts that get manifested or demonstrated, or the experiences that we find ourselves in, is based on the thoughts that we have, our feelings and our emotions are attached to. And so if you have a thought of I want $1 million, but you don't have any feeling and emotion behind it, then, you know, it will not be demonstrated, because the feeling and the emotion grow our consciousness and our capacity to receive. Because always what we want is what's greater. So without the feeling and the emotion behind it, we won't demonstrate it. So, and it's easy to get to a feeling state, an emotion type of state, is through our thinking. So you can easily say, you could tell somebody to think of something good that happened in your life and have them just stay there, or think of someone who loved you and loved you unconditionally. Now, whatever state they were in, once they start to think about this, now they move into a higher frequency, a higher state. They are steeped in feelings and emotions. They're thinking about this. Now, once you can get to this type of state, here's where you want to begin to introduce or open up to a new idea, to God's idea, or to a new idea, which is just the opposite of what you don't want. But you're already, here's the how. So you're already connected to a high level of a state of emotion and feeling. You introduce a new idea, and that becomes your practice. Let me get to this state of emotion, bring this idea. Get to this state of emotion, bring this idea. Now, that is how then the law will begin to operate upon the things that you do want. But when you are saying one thing, but believing another thing, or thinking another thing, the universe is just kind of in limbo. It's just, you know, like waiting, like make a choice.
Right. That's why, you know, the double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. So that's the practicality of it.
That's the practicality.
We're almost out of time, but I wanted to touch about the practicality in a time where there's so much fear, so much anxiety, so much angst. How can new thought pave the way for peace, joy, and a moving toward a greater community, you know, because we're in a divisive mode and a factional mode and a polarization mode in this country right now. And in some places around the world, if you look at international events. So how can new thought bring about a transformation? Very practical, person to person, growing out, you know, expression, moving out, transformation.
Yeah, well, you know, I think the real cornerstone of new thought is love, not some airy fairy kind of sense of love, but a love a love that is transformative, a love that, as you know, Dr. Martin Luther King would say, you know, in one of his readings, he says that we should be in a assiduous pursuit of truth. We should be in a pursuit of love, this sort of thing, that would allow us to be open to seeing not just from our perspective, but from seeing from other perspectives, so that we come to a point where we can begin to see that we have more in common and we are more alike and we all are wanting the same things, but based on our experiences and our past, we've limited our perspective and can't see that there's a possibility for this and that, for everybody to have their needs met. So for me, I probably would say that is the most important piece, because it's the love piece that will keep you from being stuck, or you'll become more willing to assess and to hear, to listen, and to seek, you know, because once you get steeped in love and you become love, you're less willing to be unloving. Willing to be unkind. You become more willing to listen and you know, and so I guess that's the best way I can answer that, because I know we're running out of time.
How can people see your service? I know that you're still doing virtual, so how can people see your service?
Yeah, you could go to Facebook. We live stream on Facebook. You can look up the Center of Peace, and you can.
Now, there are other Center of Pieces, right? So, do you have to be specific?
If you go to Center of Peace, yeah, our Facebook page is just titled the Center of Peace.
Okay.
There is one that's called Friends of Center of Peace. There is Center of Peace, not the. You want to make sure you put the Center of Peace. You could also go to our website, www.thecenterofpeace.org, and at the bottom of our first page on our website, there's a way for you to submit your name and information to become a part of our mailing list. And every Sunday we mail out a link to our Zoom account. So we broadcast through Zoom and we broadcast through Facebook Live. So if you want to, you know, participate in that way, you can. As I said, we send the link out every Friday or Saturday, and you'll have the link to join in the Zoom room as well.
You said something that, in my view, was a paraphrasing of Maya Angelou. She talked about the greatest of all the virtues is courage, because without courage, you can't practice the other virtues consistently. Can't be consistently kind. You can't be consistently loving, and such and so on and so forth. And in this type of environment, we it's so factional. And we've seen this in real life, where someone comes on who's a prophet, or someone who comes on as an apostle of peace, and they get pushback. And we recently saw it with Marianne Williamson when she ran for Congress, how they treated her. So how do you deal with the skepticism, the cynicism, and the unwillingness to what I call psychosclerosis, the closed-mindedness, where people are not even willing to entertain possibilities?
Yeah.
And still be effective, still be on purpose, still be within your own intention.
Yeah. What I would say is that we have to become a demonstration, that it takes time. It takes time, and we become the living demonstration. You know, for instance, I can't go back to my small town in Murfreesboro and just lay it on people's lap, right? It's not gonna work. But through technology, there are more people in Murfreesboro now who is aware of the Center of Peace just by being an example, who, you know, one cousin will say, well, you know, they call me Shy. My name is Cheyenne. They say, well, you know, Shy is a minister, a senior minister. She has a church. So now the ball really gets turning, you know, she's a female. She has a church. It's not Baptist. She has a church. And how many people? You know, 100 people. So people get curious. And then there is a prayer that they might get a hold of. Well, say, click on it. Listen to her pray, right? So this is how things are going to change. We have to be willing just to show up and to be examples. I mean, in the last year, my father has attended my services. He would never attend my services any other way. My mother, my cousins. So we just have to keep showing up and being the demonstration, being the example. We have to keep showing up in areas and, you know, and not piping down our joy and our love, not tampering who we are, being open and honest, having real dialogue with people. You know, I have a tagline that I like to use when it comes to this kind of stuff. It's that I'm tuned in, turned up, turned down for what? For who? For what? No, I'm tuned in, I'm turned up, and and I'm going to do my thing. Mm-hmm. And invite mm-hmm. others to do their thing. I think for me, I think that is the best way. And it's working.
When I was, this is like one of those doo-doo-doo-doo-doo Twilight Zone thing. I was in a bookstore one day, and Emmett Fox's The Sermon on the Mount literally, I don't know how it happened, literally fell off the shelf into my lap. And you use the word demonstration, and that one is one of his key terms. Mm-hmm. And, you know, actually where you're actually bringing things into manifestation, that's what he would call demonstration. So I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. The time went by so fast. I like to have you come back again. And, you know, we do this on a quarterly basis. So maybe sometime in the middle or the end of 2022, I'd like you to come back, because there's so many things that you just touched on that I'd like you to go into a little bit deeper, because this is, that's what we're about. Metanoia is personal transformation, personal growth. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to join you again and just send in a lot of light and love your way and your success and being one of the candle holders, you know, because collectively we will offer people something new, you know, turn people truly within, and not just give them the what, but give them the how. So just sending a lot of light and love your way and saying bravo. And it was my honor to be here with you.
Okay. Before we go, you have any words of encouragement? I appreciate the gesture and the expression of love and light sending our way. Have anything for our listeners and viewers?
Keep seeking. Keep seeking until you discover what your soul is seeking. This universe it really is magnificent and wonderful. Life really is for us and not against us. That would be what just kind of flowed to me to share, and I truly believe it.
Okay. Well, thank you. I mean, your aura and your energy is fantastic, and that's what we promote here on Metanoia. So thank you. And
Wilhelmina.
Wilhelmina, yeah, for me.
Yes, I will.
Okay. All right.
Peace and blessing.
Peace and blessing.